Blog Talk Radio.
Driving back from Chicago to Georgia on December 6th, 2004, on a Sunday night and in bad weather. And I was listening to Frank Sinatra's CD, Christmas CD, and the song playing is Whatever Happened to Christmas. And the words of this song are really speaking to me. And I'm trying to figure out what this song is saying to my soul. I recognize the feelings of joy as well as sadness. Listen to the words. And what they say to you. And better still, get a copy of this song and see what it's like to hear it put to music. Whatever happened to Christmas, it's gone and left no traces. Whatever happened to the faces or the glow? Whatever happened to Christmas? To Christmas way of living? Whatever happened to the giving, the magic in the snow? Remember the sights and the smells and the sound, and remember how love was all around. Whatever happened to it all? Whatever happened to Christmas? Bells in the streets are ringing. whatever happened to the singing, the songs we used to know? Where was I? And whatever happened to you? Whatever happened to Christmas and you? As I examine these words, I feel a sadness for the things that are not gone. We all go through losses, and they really come knocking during the Christmas holidays. This song talks about Christmas being gone and leaving no traces or glows on the faces. The sights, the sounds, the smells have disappeared. As I listen to this Jimmy Webb song recorded by Sinatra on July 24th, 1968, I must remind some of you out there that I am the ultimate Sinatra fan, president of a Sinatra fan club, yes, and president of a Rat Pack fan club as well. So I know, I got the dates pretty much down. I am, after all, a historian. But I was reminded of how we allow life and the unhappy times to rob us of such joy. But I don't think life's changes just does the robbing. We are willing to... We're willing participants many times for allowing this to happen to this precious holiday and the birth of Jesus. I admit, this song reminds me of people that used to be a huge part of my life and that are no longer with me. For instance, now gone from me are my mother, my father, and my youngest sister, as well as close other close family. But they're not the only ones missing. Also gone are some friends and other people that had made huge impacts on my life. It also reminds me of the little boy I used to be, and how the excitement of being a child has left me. There's another song by Faith Hill called Where Are You, Christmas? That takes somewhat of a different slant on how Christmas is missing. It talks about the missing laughter, the inability to hear the music, a world that is changing as we change. And it asks the question, does that mean that Christmas changes? As I remember Christmas past and what wonderful memories they were, I feel a sadness for the lost Christmas. But at the same time, I feel a warm, loving feeling for what it used to be. For, these times remind me of both the positive and the negative. I remember one Christmas when I was 10 years old and I had gotten this beautiful Schwinn bicycle that year. I was in the sixth grade and living on a really quiet street. It was 28 East 100th Street on the south side of Chicago. The house number was 28. I was so happy to get up early that morning. It must have been about 5 o'clock, and see that bike under the tree. It was blue with a horn and light as well as fenders. And I can't remember having a happier Christmas unless it was the year I got a G.I. Joe Tonka truck that had a full set of G.I. Joe. The Kung Fu Grip dude hadn't come out yet. It was a wonderful Christmas, and I recall it with yes, great joy and great sadness. Well, that story paints a brief picture of a small snippet in a time of my life before Christmas. In 1990, that particular Christmas finds me working very hard as a Marine officer stationed in Spain. I can see all the people around me so clearly. As a Toys for Tots program that we hosted was in full swing, the mood is good for this particular holiday. I see myself going out with my commanding officer and to look into his truck to see excitement on his face and that of his children as we bring them in to help with the toy drive. The smiles on their faces were heartwarming and a memory that I will cherish always. As I come back to the present, I notice the pictures and of family and friends, some of them still with me and some of them are gone. And the sights and the sounds and the smells all come back to me. I realize our memories of Christmas bring both the good and the bad memories. They go together. Christmas today is just as beautiful and loving as it has always been. But some circumstances have changed because of time itself. Our lives are intertwined with many people who have shared times with us and moved on. Some have left a deep impression on our souls. Those people we will continue to love as long as we are on this earth. I thank God for all those people and the beautiful times I shared with them. These are memories that are more precious than gold. Today, I just wanted to say how much I honor each of these, as well as other precious memories that I will bring out and visit in the days ahead. There are 24 days left until Christmas Day. I also hope that if I'm allowed to stay on this planet for a while longer, I will add other beautiful times to this book of memories. And I hope that some way, somehow, I become a part of the memories of some of the dear people that have made such an impression on me. Where was I, and whatever happened to you? The question is for the ages. We can all put ourselves back into memories that are so precious, and that is so beautiful. We can stop and indulge ourselves just just for a brief while, but move on after a short visit and see if we can brighten someone else's life with a smile and some good deeds. If you're like me, when in the throes of remembering the past and some of the pain it presents to you, think on the good things God has done for you and how blessed we really are. Well, then you'll feel better. This little exercise, I promise, will help. And remember, as in Faith Hill's song, if there is love in your heart and your mind, you will feel Christmas all the time. Now that's a worthy goal. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year on this first day of December with 24 days left until Christmas. And if I am approached by anyone who wishes me a damn happy holiday, well, I simply don't know what I'll do. But I swear to God, it'll be amusing. And it'll be something to see and hear. Okay, moving forward. Let's get into some politics and then see where that goes from there. The good news on my Obama watch today, oh yeah, the good news is that the Democrats and the Washington establishment have heard the message from the American people on Election Day 2010. How could they have not? It was an epic beginning. 1932 style rout, as predicted by me not long ago. The bad news is how much trouble our country's in. For after all of President Obama's double talk, sweet talk, right after the vote, the harsh reality, inconsistent with our very democracy, is that the Democrats and the Washington establishment are rejecting the message the people sent. Their response is the political equivalent of shut up. How else can we interpret the decision of the House Democrats to defy the American people and reelect ultra-left San Francisco Democrat Nancy Pelosi as minority leader? House Democrat candidates will now campaign in 2012 on the theme, vote for us and bring back Pelosi. Well, I think now they've answered the question. How very stupid do they think we are? And how else can we interpret President Obama, who said at his press conference the day after the shellacking, over the last 2 years we have made progress, but clearly the American people have not felt that yet. And they told us that yesterday. Well, just what exactly is he saying here? The words say, the American people told us on Election Day that the Democrats are not moving to implement their left-wing agenda fast enough. President Obama is now acting as if this is the message he got on Election Day. Wow. And how else can we interpret Senator Jay Rockefeller, whom I happen to like, who said in a Senate hearing just before Thanksgiving, I hunger for quality news. there's a little bug inside me which wants to get the FCC to say to Fox and to MSNBC, out, off, end, goodbye. Funny he should say that, because there's a little bug inside me that wants to get the FEC to say to Rockefeller, out, off, end, goodbye. I mean, Senator Rockefeller has been a senator since I was 15. Shouldn't he be considering getting a job? This is your modern Democrat Party, run by new left hippies from the 60s in suits, who don't even believe in the First Amendment because they're really just a Hugo Chavez in waiting. Obama seeks to rule by decree. President Obama is already taking another step in that direction, for now that the American people have terminated his ability to ram his socialist agenda through a thoroughly left-wing Congress, he has decided to rule by decree. President Obama indicated as much again in his November 3rd press conference regarding the cap-and-trade carbon tax bill. Obama said cap-and-trade was just one way of skinning the cat. That's a nice metaphor. It was a means to an end. I'm going to be looking for other means to address this problem. Interesting way of phrasing, don't you think? Perhaps a presidential order, perhaps superseding the Congress and the Senate, you know, checks and balances. You know, I once spoke to someone, and I'm fond of saying that. I have a saying that just because you can doesn't mean you should. And surely the Constitution provides for executive orders, but it certainly doesn't call for the abuse of them to ram through a variety of ill-advised and country-destroying policies. Don't you think? Obama's EPA has now begun the process of regulating carbon dioxide emissions, CO2. Under the Clean Air Act, note that CO2 is not a pollutant, but a natural substance in the environment essential to all human life on the planet. Without CO2, plants would die off, and without plants, there would be no oxygen or food for humans and other animals. Why would the Obama administration EPA want to regulate that? Ask yourself that question. This CO2 regulation will be even more burdensome on the economy than cap and trade. Both the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg News reported last week that major energy, manufacturing, and construction projects would be shut down in an indefinite moratorium as a result. So why? Does Mr. Obama believe that this will help America, help get us back on our feet financially, help business grow and create jobs? Because it seems to me that it's all about destroying the economy and jobs and growth when if a president of the United States would seek to sign into law an executive order or direct the EPA to enact policies that are obviously counterproductive to what America is really all about, creating jobs and prosperity and innovations and all that, well, why would he do that? Ask yourself that question and perhaps do a little research on your own. The journal reports that the regulation will force mass retirements of the coal plants that provide half of America's electricity. As a result, electricity costs, as Obama himself said, would necessarily skyrocket. As candidate Obama said when he was a candidate on the campaign trail, why would Obama want to force electricity costs to necessarily skyrocket? That's another question. It seems to me, and I'm a relatively intelligent guy, that President Obama is doing everything he possibly can to bring about the destruction of our capitalist system and to, as he said, fundamentally transform the United States of America. But the question is, another question is, what does he want to transform the United States of America into? The Stone Age? If your electric bill necessarily skyrockets, what does that do to you? What does that do to your purchasing power, to your economy, and so on? I mean, here, I am holding... Here on my desk, I have an electric bill. Just got it today. It says that I owe $360. Well, $300.60. That's my bill for the month. That's a lot of jack. And it's just me. Now, yeah, I got a lot of computers going. I got, big TVs and stuff like that. But, it's a lot of bread. And, So if Mr. Obama wants my bill to necessarily skyrocket, then I might as well be looking at $1,000 bill. Maybe that's what he wants. And why would he want that? Yeah, that's one shoe. For folks who can afford to buy costly shoes. People who are making that kind of bread. I wonder... Do you? But there can be no applauding the impact of those high electricity costs on manufacturing and the jobs of blue-collar workers. The regulations would take time to fully phase in and produce their full economic effect, I suppose, but the resulting job loss are estimated to be 7 million or more nationwide, which would be roughly a 50% increase in today's persistent high level of unemployment. That would involve an estimated $1 trillion a year in additional cost to the economy. Wow. Why would this man want this to happened? For all of you Obama lovers out there, Do you fully understand that these things will not only these policies will not only affect the rich, but they will affect you? Because not only will my electric bill, which stands at $300.60, so will yours. Your bill will be higher. And quite frankly, I make enough money where I can go ahead and pay this bill and there's not a problem. But do you? Do you? Because Obama wants to make everything equal. So your bill, if you have a $30 bill a month or $60 or $90, your bill will be $302 like mine. But I can afford to pay that $300. I ask once again, can you? When everything is equal in everybody's house, as Al Sharpton put it, that's when the world will be a better place. So, keep kissing Barack Obama's ass and talking about how handsome he is and how well-spoken he is and how brilliant he is and how he's a Jesus Christ come back to save us from ourselves and how he's the greatest president on the face of the earth. Just keep on kissing his black ass, because there will be a day of reckoning, and that time will come where you will curse the name Barack Obama if he has his way. Right now, a lot of you out there, a lot of you Obama lovers out there are all enchanted with him. He's the first black president. They were first, a lot of firsts in the world. There was the first mass murderer. There was the first rapist. There's a whole lot of firsts. Just because he's the first doesn't mean he's the best. They're all enchanted with him. Never mind that the man can't string a sentence together without the aid of a teleprompter. Never mind that when he doesn't have that teleprompter, he tends to say really stupid things. Never mind that he wants to ensure that not just your electric bill will necessarily skyrocket, but that everything else will skyrocket too, the cost of everything. Do your research. And then ask yourself, why am I kissing this man's ass? Why am I so in love with Barack Obama? When he starts to hurt that wallet, when he starts to hurt that pocketbook, and you can't go out and get your Starbucks coffee or your new pair of pumps or a new laptop for me or a new anything, well, he won't be such a fine, attractive person anymore, will he? He won't be such a deity anymore. You won't be kissing his butt anymore when your wallet or your purse or your pocketbook is empty. Oh, and don't forget, you know when you used to be able, that long ago time when you used to be able to go to call up your doctor's office and schedule an appointment? Oh, we have an opening for tomorrow at 11. Come on in, Miss Collins. We'll see you then. We'll call you the day before just to confirm. Those days are over. Those days will be over when you can go to the dentist and get that sadist to work on your teeth and send you home crying for your mama. Oh, you'll have to wait in line for that. You'll have to wait in a very long line in order to have to experience that pain and discomfort. You'll have to wait in a very long line if you have a cold or if your leg has fallen off. Because more than 30 million new people who don't have to pay jack are added to the rolls, and as far as I can tell, there aren't 30 million new doctors to help get things done. So, thank you, Mr. Obama, and Merry Christmas to you, too. And for all of you folks out there kissing his butt, thank you, Massa. Can I have another? Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe, and I believe so strongly, that you'll stop kissing that ass. You'll stop kissing that butt when that wallet takes its first hit. Oh, yeah. And I can't wait because, quite frankly, I'm taken care of for the rest of my life. I got enough jack, and I got some hidden somewhere, and I got a lot of damn gold. Do you have any gold? Nope. Oh. Well, I suppose you're going to be at the mercy of our Lord and Savior, Barack Obama, and Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid, and Al Sharpton, who believes that when everything is equal in everybody's house, then everything will be groovy. Now, back to the CO2 regulations. There's no scientific justification for this economic suicide, mind you, none. Which is why even the current overwhelming Democrat Congress refuses to pass cap and trade. But this doesn't even take into account the full economic effect of the recession that would inevitably, inevitably result. I can never get that word right. And the first time, inevitably, there you go. Indeed, achieving the CO2 targets would essentially repeal the Industrial Revolution, which would involve a lot more lost jobs than 7 million. If you don't think anyone would ever attempt that, then you don't understand the extremist threat facing our country. This is a man that a lot of you voted for. This is a man that a lot of you are enchanted with. Ask yourselves, why is he doing this? Could it be that our Lord and Savior, President Barack Obama, wants to bring about the total collapse of our economic system? That way we would be beholden to him and his administration, and perhaps he could possibly perpetuate it further than 2 terms if we are so cursed to have him for a second term, that he could possibly impose martial law and suspend habeas corpus and establish himself as a ruler. All these scenarios come to mind when we have a president who wants to enact a system that will bankrupt not only you and me, but the entire nation. And he knows it, and he says it. Throw in the fact that he has met 4 or 5 times now with billionaire George Soros, who has openly told us that he wants to bring down the American economic and political system so that there would be an open society. And for those of you who don't know what he means by open society, he explained it. There are no nationalities. He wants a world where there are no nationalities, no borders, with one ruler, a new world order. This is his goal. This is his stated goal. And he's bankrolled the president into office and has met with him now 5 times. And then add in the fact that the president of the United States wants to enact a system called cap and trade, where if you put CO2 into the air as a company, as an energy producing company, then you have to pay by the pound or the tonnage or whatever to do so, that you have to pay the government to do so. That, of course, would bankrupt the companies or corporations and bring us to a screeching halt as an industrialized nation such as we are. So if he openly wants to do this, meeting with George Soros 5 times, George Soros wants an open society where there are no countries, no borders, no nationalities, and only one monetary system and one system of government. I know it sounds far-fetched, and I know it sounds conspiratorial in nature, like I'm some crazy loon conspiratorial guy. But I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid. I read. I listen to what Soros says. I listen to what Obama says, the words that are coming out of his mouth. You know, yeah, he double talks his butt off, doesn't he? And he really says what he really thinks without that prompter. But this is what he said. So the effects of cap and trade would be particularly harsh in areas where the industries produce higher than average CO2 levels, such as Republican Texas and Louisiana, with their vibrant oil and natural gas industries. Again, those higher CO2 levels are not harmful to anyone. No. The scientifically proven effect would merely be to increase agricultural production in the region. Why would Obama not want to do that? Think about it. Why would he not want to do that? Again, because CO2 is like oxygen for plants. But as my man Dick Morris explained in his column on November 22nd, that's what the EPA plans to do, virtually making economic growth illegal in large parts of the United States. Why? Why? So, moving forward, Mr. Obama also wants to maintain an offshore drilling ban in key areas. Put it all together. Don't just take my word for it. Read about it. Read about it. Do your homework, do your research, and you'll come to understand, as I have, that this guy is bad news. You got to wonder what's going on in this guy's head. You know, I am a student of Revelations. And I don't want to say that the guy is the Antichrist, because, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. But isn't he starting to sound like it? Or perhaps he just hates his own country, the country he is president of. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar announced Wednesday afternoon that the Obama administration will now not allow offshore oil drilling in the eastern Gulf of Mexico or off the Atlantic and Pacific coast as part of the next five-year drilling plan, reversing two key policy changes President Obama announced in late March. Why stifle the economy in key areas like Texas and Louisiana and those areas? It's starting to seem like something's not right around here. Salazar said that we're adjusting our strategy in the areas where there are no active leases. Salazar told reporters in a phone call, adding that the administration has decided not to expand to new areas at this time and instead focus on and expand our critical resources on areas that are currently active when it comes to oil and gas drilling. In March, less than a month before the BP oil spill, Obama and Salazar said they would open up the Eastern Gulf and parts of the Atlantic, including off the coast of Virginia, to offshore oil and gas exploration. On both of those new areas, the administration said it would start scoping to see if oil and gas drilling would be suitable. The Eastern Gulf remains closed to drilling under a congressional moratorium, but the White House has indicated it would press to lift the moratorium if necessary. So what we have here is yet another big mess. Another shameful, awful mess. And now let's recap to the last segment and then get on out of here. On World AIDS Day, which is today, Larry Kramer, who first warned of the AIDS epidemic, rips Do Nothing Obama. The man who first sounded the alarm about the AIDS epidemic and shamed the government into action for a decade had some choice words for President Obama. In an interview with the New York Daily News about growing older with HIV, Kramer, now 75, and writing a novel about America and AIDS, offered up his views on the current president. Mr. Do Nothing Obama will say today, let's think of all the poor dead people. Well, let's honor all the dead instead of fighting for the living. He has been really useless in terms of both HIV and gay issues. An exceedingly large disappointment to me. How useless he has been. He is simply not a leader. He may be president, but he is not a leader. Which brings me to this. George Bush, the president before Barack Obama, worked tirelessly with AIDS victims, AIDS patients. He funded research. He worked tirelessly with Bono in Africa. And his focus was not on so much on North Korea or China or any of the other troubled nations other than Africa. But he doesn't get the credit for that. No one speaks of it much outside of Republican political circles. President President Bush did more for AIDS research than Bill Clinton. Certainly more than my man Ronald Reagan, whom I think was remiss in dealing with that issue. All right. Last segment, then we're going to get on out of here. GOP will filibuster all bills if taxes and budget are not addressed. We know Harry, dingy, dirty Harry Reid wants to got up on the stand the other day at the beginning of the lame duck session and told a 10-minute football story, which made no sense whatsoever, by the way. But he told the story and wasted valuable time getting down to business. But all 42 Republican senators have signed a letter refusing to vote for cloture on any bill before the Senate until the federal government is funded beyond this week, which no one's done, and the Bush-era income tax cuts are addressed before they expire December 31st. Now, one should understand that Bush tax cuts are a misnomer. We're not cutting taxes. There will not be a vote to cut taxes for the rich and cut taxes for the wealthy and cut taxes for the middle class. The vote will be to maintain the present tax base, not to cut anything. That should be understood. Well, the letter goes on to say, we write to inform you that we will not agree to invoke cloture on the motion to proceed to any legislative item until the Senate has acted to fund the government and we have prevented the tax increase that is currently awaiting all American taxpayers, said the letter, which was sent to Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid this morning. Bravo. Good going, guys. Good going. Way to stand up. Wow. How did that moron get reelected? I thought that dude was dead and buried. What is propping him up anyway? He seems like he's on Ritalin or whatever that drug is that makes you dull and listless. It seems to me that he can barely take a breath. If he keels over right now, I wouldn't be surprised, because it looks like he can barely stand. Has anybody ever heard him speak? It's like taking no dose. And just you want to get in a good nap? Go to C-SPAN and listen to Harry Reid talk. What the hell is going on in the state of Nevada? I would have wagered a massive amount of my personal wealth that he was going to be defeated and gone. But somehow he was reelected. You know, I wonder what the heck is going on in Nevada. I mean, I'm not going to call the American voter stupid, but I just don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, I got to tell you this. Earlier, we were talking about Christmas, and I want to close this radio blog with this. When I was a kid, we talked, and I walked down the street. I would hear "Merry Christmas" and "Happy New Year." I walked down the street earlier today and I heard, "Happy Holidays." What does that mean? Why not? And, you know, of course, I responded, "Merry Christmas and happy, have a happy new year." Christmas is meant to be a happy time as we celebrate the birth of Jesus. We spend time with relatives and friends and we share a few gifts. But it's really about the birth of Christ and it should be a very happy time. Why is it happy holidays? When we were kids, it was, and as it should still be, Merry Christmas. Really. Now, it's important that we keep focus on the true meaning of Christmas. It's not about going out and buying gifts and toys and presents and all that. That's all fun. Of course it is. It's beautiful. And it's fun, but that's not what Christmas is really all about. Christmas brings, as I stated earlier, all kinds of emotions. Many are happy. Christmas can bring with it other problems, such as the loss of a job, increased financial difficulty in this time, marriages that are in trouble, family disagreements, and health problems, just to name a few. It's a wonderful life, though. And speaking of that, It's a Wonderful Life, one of my all-time favorite movies, touches on Christmas and George Bailey's Uncle Billy and the missing $8,000 that was actually stolen by Mr. Potter at the bank that day. Mr. Potter, of course, the richest man in Bedford Falls and also a man of no friends to speak of. You know the story. Uncle Billy goes into the bank to make the deposit and accidentally hands Mr. Potter the newspaper with the money inside. Mr. Potter sees a chance to gain way more than money from this mistake. Well, Clarence, the angel, I'll say that again. Clarence, the angel, was sent by God to rescue George Bailey. Oh, yeah, that's right. Every time the bell rings. Excuse me. Sorry. Clarence, the angel, was sent by God to rescue George Bailey after he became so depressed that he decided to take his own life. Think about that. Well, you know what? We got to go. But we'll pick up this one tomorrow because it's really, really important. I hope you all have a good night, a safe day tomorrow, and we will talk again. Good night, everybody.
Twinkle, twinkle, little me, I have a lovely light. I'm the star upon your tree that makes your Christmas bright. Twinkle, twinkle, little me, I left the Milky Way just so I could come and be with you on Christmas Day.
me where you are, and heaven gave me life. I'm that friendly little star you wish upon each night.
Twinkle, twinkle, little me,
I have a reason to. If you give unselfishly and make
a wish come true,
I'll always shine for you.
Oh yeah.
Hi kids, look out your window.
I love this song.
You see that little star way up there? The one that's all alone? Well, that's me. That's
mm-hmm.
right. And this Christmas, I'm coming all the way down to where you are just to light up your Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope to light up your heart. Well,
twinkle, twinkle, little me, I have a present too.
If you give unselfishly and
make a wish come true,
I'll always shine for you.